Welcome to The Blind Spot, a podcast where we explore human instinctual drives through the lens of the Enneagram, nonviolent communication, and resonant healing with personal stories from individuals living real human lives. My name is Kara Nance, self-res, social, sexual blind, 3-wing-2 with 3-7-1 trifix and ENTP cognitive preferences. I hope you enjoy these stories. Welcome to The Blind Spot. I'm here today with Carl Hebenstreit, who is the author of Taking Care of Business with the Enneagram, as well as Nina and the Really, Really Tough Decision, which is a children's book that helps young ones to understand the Enneagram as well as the caregivers that are raising them. And Carl is an executive coach, author, speaker, leadership, and team organization development consultant who comes out of Southern California and works all over the country and I think even the world. Is that true, Carl? Yeah, you have clients Absolutely. Everywhere. And I just want to take a moment to say thank you for being here. And I'm really excited to talk about the new book that you have out. Welcome.
Thank you, Kara. I appreciate it. I appreciate the having the space to do so.
Yeah. So it's been fun getting to know you. And I heard that this book is actually the third edition, in a way, of this journey that you've been on. And it sounds like you just continue to add the wisdom and learnings and things that you've really been discovering in your experiential journey. So it sounds like there's some really great pearls in there for us. Do you want to speak a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, just like the Enneagram is continuously evolving and we're learning a lot more about its power and its depth and its applications and all the different areas and nuances that make each human being different, because we are not just one type. There is so much diversity and variation within each person. That's exactly the process that I went through with the book, which was originally came out in 2016, and realized that there's more and more and more that was being researched, being developed. It was being used in different ways. There were more articles and research studies that were happening. So I started to update the book. So it had a second edition and then a third edition to put in a lot of the current challenges that organizations are facing, a lot of the current trends, a lot more focus on diversity, a lot more focus on agility, and more case studies. And even the new book is actually now in color. So it actually is easier to look at some of the charts and graphs and see the nuances and the differences. So it's just a constantly evolving learning and journey and experience, just like life and just like the Enneagram is.
That's wonderful. What would you say are some of the major things that people are facing, and what are some of the ways that your book is supportive? Do people know the Enneagram at all, or is just kind of stepping into the whole idea that there are these types pretty mind expanding, and then where do you go with them from there?
Great question, because I think that what we're seeing now is more and more people are hearing about the Enneagram from a pop culture perspective. So they're hearing about it, their friends are talking about it at parties, at social events, at gatherings, and people are taking those quick online quizzes or the Cosmo quizzes or those types of things, and then not really getting a validated in-depth understanding, but it's fun to talk about. But it's also getting the word of the Enneagram out there. So people are more willing and more open and seeing that there is this is an interesting instrument that is providing some additional depth to personality understanding. And this is really truly motivation understanding. So it's the differentiator between all other instruments is that the Enneagram helps you to understand what's been motivating you for your entire life and what will continue to motivate you for your entire life. And learning that difference and seeing the implications of that, especially in my business and my work is with organizations and businesses, that this can really be a game changer for leaders and supervisors and managers who are trying to figure out what is making my team tick. What am I doing to tick them off? And what can I change? What do I really need to focus on for attraction, retention, motivation? We've heard a lot about quiet quitting in the past. How do we prevent that from happening? And ultimately, we're really, if you look at it, we're really only rewarding 3 types out of the 9 in organizations. So how do we make sure that we reward and motivate and engage and attract all the 9 types? Because we need the diversity of those perspectives and the gifts that each brings in order to create the best possible product or service or experience. Because guess what? the world is comprised of these nine types, and they're looking for someone to understand them so that they feel understood in the service or the product that is being sold to them. Mm-hmm. So we really need all of those nine energies represented in all organizations, whether they're the person's core energy or that we realize that we can access all nine energies within us. So it has become more popular. People are more willing to be engaged in learning more about it, especially when we let go of some things that we've learned that may not be helping us and maybe preventing us from being more open to diverse perspectives. And when I say that, I'm talking about things like the golden rule that people are really, really latched onto, thinking that it means something and that it's an excuse for something, but it's really not. And the golden rule, of course, is treat others the way that you want to be treated, which is totally non-inclusive and totally not open to diverse perspectives, because we're not treating people the way that they want to be treated and finding out how they want to be treated. And then going even a step further, golden rule, treat people the way I want to be treated. Platinum rule, treat people the way they want to be treated. But then do something with that. How can you integrate that knowledge into your own self for your own development, your own increased emotional intelligence? And maybe call it something like the rhodium rule. People are using that word now about how do we go that one step further and integrate it into our own selves and develop ourselves even more that way.
I love this idea and the frame that you're coming from. And I also just want to name that we didn't introduce you and your type. So my listeners are into typology. So we'll go ahead and reveal that you are an Enneagram 2 and that your stack is either sexual, social, or social, sexual, but self-pressed blind most likely. Mm-hmm. And in terms of your Myers-Briggs typing, ENFJ. So, and if you're into trifix, it's the 279 trifix is what I think I heard you say.
That's
so
right.
We now have a flavor of
I'm
Carl
stuck with
here.
Those rose-colored glasses on all the time.
Yeah. And so that positivity and that real feeling into other people, I can just see how that's shining through in your work. And I'm just struck by what a gift it is when we really lean into the strengths of our type and use that in the form of service, which is what it sounds like you've been doing.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's helping me. And at an early age in my career, I found out that really focusing on others, and it's obviously much more intuitive for a type two to do this, leaning into what are the other people's needs in this situation, and especially in organizations, in business, in meetings, in presentations, like how do I reach my audience? What does my audience really want in this situation? What are they thinking as opposed to what I think that they're thinking or that I want them to think that they may not be ready to?
Yeah.
So
do you
really
talk about the instinctual drives in your teachings with organizations as well, or do you mostly stick
Absolutely.
To type?
Yeah. And yeah, because it helps to, it helps when people are in a team and they may have the same core type, they may be leading from the same core type, but they may see each other like, oh, that doesn't look right. I don't resonate exactly with this person. I resonate more with this person that also has that core type, but why is this person different? So that may help to explain those nuances and differences for them. I mean, there are many reasons why that could be, but that could be one of them.
Yeah. Are you able to use the term sexual or do you use one-to-one in an organization?
One-on-one, yeah.
One-on-one?
Yeah, definitely
yeah.
One-on-one.
Okay.
Which is, it's funny because the tests that I use, the assessments that I use have the acronyms or the initials SX, SP, and SO. Mm-hmm. But of course, when you say SX, right next to it, it says one-to-one.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just curious because I think there's a lot of conversation about how when we take the sex out of the sexual instinct, we're sterilizing it a little bit when we're teaching it in corporate. But there's a lot of things. Those of us in the Enneagram community are pretty comfortable acknowledging that the Enneagram has been used as it has spiritual origins, that it has the sexual instinct as a part of the subtypes, but that is probably going to turn off a large portion of the population where it's just not appropriate to bring those types of belief systems into those environments. So it is sweet to just see how we can transmit the teachings in a language that's more comfortable for people to understand.
Right. And you use the word transmit, which of course is a Mario Socorro term for the sexual or one-to-one or transmitting energy, right?
Exactly. So, yes. Right. So that's what we're doing right now as we are trying to transmit word about your book and everything. So we're using all of this sexual instinctual energy to get it out there. So
great,
it is,
segue.
It's fun and it's exciting. So I thought it would be fun if we maybe took a spin around the wheel and if you could maybe share an example of what that Enneagram point might either be struggling with in the workplace or how they might want to be seen or motivated. And a suggestion that you might give also if we needed to integrate that. So I know that's a big thing. And so you could maybe pick one or two or however it's coming up for you. But I think it might be really illustrative about how your services can really benefit people in an organization and what they might learn more about if they pick up your book.
Yeah, thank you. That's let's make sure that we also approach it from a positive psychology perspective as well and then talk about the strengths that they bring. Each type, each energy. And it's not just people leading from that, but anyone can tap into these energies and anyone can access these energies at any point. What we're trying to prevent is people unconsciously going there without the actual intent.
Okay.
Because we want to show up the best possible in each situation. So
Where do you want to start?
Do you usually start with one or do you start with eight or do you start with
I think
nine,
I'm going to start with eight because eight is often in leadership.
Yes.
So, you know, we'll often find our eights. Like you said, business tends to incentivize the threes, the sevens, and the eights.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and start in the body center and we'll start with point eight. And I think when we think of eight, we know that they carry this natural strength, this leadership vibe that we'll often see them in leadership. I'm already imagining that they might run into troubles because they are direct, that they may
they
not recognize.
Too direct,
too direct.
Be perceived as being too direct,
Or
received as being too direct, absolutely.
Yeah, and that journey towards the heart, the integration of point two that the eight needs to go through is really what opens them up to loving all the people on their team and all of their manifestations. So I'm curious, how do you help your point eight leaders to see and understand that? I'd love to hear something about that.
There are a lot of eight leaders, of course. You're absolutely correct. We reward them. We promote them. They exhibit the leadership traits that in Western civilization that we are really looking for. And a lot of times, again, your strength, when you overuse it, can become a weakness. And Marshall Goldsmith has the whole point about what got you here won't get you there. So yes, it's great that you have this drive, this ability to execute, this ability to get things done, this focus on be brief, be bright, be gone. It's just like, let's get this done. Let's focus on the business. And sometimes that can be intimidating. The power, the energy, the passion that comes with being an eight can be overwhelming or intimidating to others. And sometimes that's not the type eight's intent. So it's recognizing, helping them recognize, when is this going a little bit too much? And when is it counterproductive to what you're trying to get done? And when can you actually access some of that nine energy and temper that and bring it down a notch? Not to be disingenuous or not to not be yourself, but to recognize when you might be too much. You might be getting too much.
And how do you coach these eights to recognize that?
So sometimes they can see it sometimes. Sometimes people who are a bit able to speak truth to power will tell them if they're in their inner circle and they have that connection with them, that relationship with them. Other times it's the awareness of this person's backing up. This person is like avoiding me. This person is not meeting me. And that's what the eights want. The eights want to engage. The eights want people to meet them at their energy and their passion, their strength, right? So it's to recognize that some people, a lot of people, most people aren't going to naturally be able to do that. That's not their inclination. That's not in their DNA. That's not their motivation. And to how to access what they need from those people without turning them off or shutting them down or creating a bad relationship with them. Mm-hmm. So it's as easy as having people in your court, right? That remind you, oh, you're coming across a little too strong here, or you're getting too passionate, or this person's backing off. So it's either the self-awareness if they can see it themselves or other people in their court that may help them with that. Also recognize it in themselves, because a lot of times they can either feel like they're getting the redness, they're getting the anger is coming up. So when do they feel that? When do they feel themselves shut down? When are they going to their five arrow, right? When what's triggered them to get them into that space? And how can they consciously choose to be somewhere as opposed to the automatic response of going to the five?
Yeah. Are you introducing presence practice and just that ability to take the breath and feel the body? Yes. And really expand the belly center, which can hold all of that charge? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. All different types of modalities and methods that will work. And it depends on the person, which is going to work best for them, of course, and what they're willing to do. It's all about readiness. It's really about the person's readiness too. Mm-hmm. Because there are sometimes when people say, why should I have to change? Why can't they meet me at this? And it's the understanding that people may not be able to. Doesn't mean that they're weak. It's just that they don't have that in them. They're strong in other ways, and you can tap into that strength. But they may just, the strength that you're looking for may not be the strength that they're able to convey, because they're not coming at it from your same eight energy.
Thank you.
So it's really a realization of there are different types, there are different motivations, there are different people, and they all still want to be with you. They're on your team, right? They're not with you. If they're not with you, they're against you. They're still with you. They're not really against you. It's just that, how do you recognize the way that they're with you as opposed to the expectation of how you want them to be
Thank you.
Seen as with you?
Yeah. So point nine, I would love to hear your recommendations for how do we connect with our point nine employees? How do we motivate them? What is it that they need in the work environment that we should all be attending to if we work with nines?
So nines tend to be, through my research, and I think through other people's research as well, the employees that will stick with an organization or a role through everything, because they don't like change. They don't want the disruption. They don't want the creation of conflict. And unfortunately, what we've seen over the past decade to two decades is this increase in the rapidity of change. The way that the world is changing, the way that demands, the business is changing, the environment is changing, the competition is changing. It's everything has just been increased so much, multiplied. And for the nines, it's trying to create an environment where we value the peace and harmony and the systems perspective that they bring, because their values, that systems perspective, the eights are all about the execution. And the nines are, hold on a second, how does this fit within the system? Is this really what we're trying to accomplish? Is it sustainable? Or is it just a one-off thing and then we should be really doing something else? So to honor and value their ability to see what's going on in the entire system, and to make sure that change is inevitable, how can we make the change the least painful as possible? The make it go away as quickly as possible. Sadly, we've gone away from the old models of change where it was you're doing something in a certain way and then something happens and then you have to unfreeze that and then you change it and then you refreeze into the new way. And I don't think we're having any refreezes anymore. So I think it's getting comfortable in that state of slushiness, latching on to the things that won't change, like maybe the vision of the organization or the mission of the organization, and being comfortable to get through all the rest of that other slushiness. So it's helping them get through that with the understanding that, yes, we will get to a place of relative harmony. It may not be 100% harmonious, but we're making sure that everyone is being treated appropriately, well, equivalently. Yeah.
You're giving me some big insights. I had a 0.9 employee for 7 years who was absolutely wonderful. And I was so crushed when she gave notice and was shifting. And it hasn't been even completely clear to me because, you know, on a personal level, we really had a deep connection. And I don't think it was this nine thing where they're saying one thing and meaning another, but we actually had about 8 months of perpetual change going on in my organization. Mm-hmm. And we did not have, you know, I'm an ENTP. So having the structure and the organizational things, like I just kind of expect them to figure it out and make it work. And that can be really disorienting, I think, for a nine. Mm-hmm. And it just, I think, got to a point where it was overwhelming her nervous system, because to have an 8-month period of time where things are not worked out and the changes have not all been smooth, and every day feels like there's dis-ease either in my patient population or around the employees, I think that actually just became too much. So that's helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
The other thing with nines, of course, is that it's this interesting, they go along to get along. They don't want to ruffle feathers. And they want directionality, but they don't want to be told what to do. So I think that's that fine line, walking that fine line with nines, of, because they can see everything. They can see how valuable every different thing is. And they may have some challenges in saying, well, which direction should I go in? So if you can lead the nines and this is the direction, but not say, do this right now this way, right? That's going to maybe be conceived or perceived and received as being challenging and confrontational. But it's working that way.
Them. Thank you very much.
And finding ways of inviting them in, because it's part of that invisibility triad, like making sure that you really know what's going on with them.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And how about our Enneagram point ones?
So we do tend to see ones in leadership positions as well because of their focus on quality, right? They're ultra focused on the values of the organization and the integrity. So those are some of the values that they bring, of course. And sometimes ones get into trouble because of the expectation of perfection, which of course is not possible, especially with everything moving so fast. So the realization for the ones there is going to be like, what needs to be perfect? Because in some industries, you have to be perfect in like filing for FDA approval, or
in my practice, calling in the right medication dose so that somebody doesn't get sick from a wrong dosage. Yeah.
Exactly. Compliance stuff. Yes. All that stuff. And what stuff does not need to be 100%. And a lot of times the Pareto principle really comes into play there, because if we remind ourselves in nature that this principle is that it'll take us 20% of our effort and resources and time to achieve the 80th percent of the results, 80% results. And then it'll take the other 80% of time to achieve, or resources or effort, to achieve that elusive other 20%, guess what? Things have changed so rapidly, that may not be applicable anymore. That may not be relevant. So how do we figure out what the 70, 80, 90% is that's good enough, that we don't have to spend that full 100% of time, or even that extra 80% of time, that we can get to with 20 or 25% of resources and time? So really helping them with that. And also, again, catching them, helping them catch themselves in, I'm asking for too much. This isn't possible. This isn't going to be possible.
Yeah.
So I had a boss who led with type one many, many jobs ago. And when we had a great relationship, we still do. And when she would come to me with things that were absolutely right, she was absolutely right. It would be a wonderful thing if we would be able to do this, but our systems couldn't handle it. We didn't have the resources. We were an outpost of a corporate setting. They were not possible. We'd have to do workarounds. So I would get this, when she would ask for something, I'd be like, really? And she'd say, she'd go, I know. My one is coming out. I'm expecting these things. And we could go in that direction, but we would never be able to achieve the full vision of that perfection.
Yeah.
But it's great to have that, because we want to aspire to that, but also knowing the limitations and what's practical.
Yeah. And I can see how in an organization, both the eights and the ones share the necessity of developing that presence practice and that ability to ground and to just really be able to say, I need to tone it down a little bit here before I alienate myself from my team or my staff or the people that are helping me to execute on the vision that's so important to me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. While still being true to themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Bringing that gift of the quality that we all would love to have in our world, but also having to deal with the reality and that serenity prayer, the wisdom to know when to push and the wisdom to know when to stand down and how to know the difference.
Except the things that we can't change, right?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, how about our point twos? You can speak from that point.
Yeah. So a lot of the challenges, and I have a lot of type two coaching clients, and I can relate very well to them, obviously. Boundaries. Boundaries, I think it really comes down to boundaries because they want to help. They want to help so much. They feel like they've been put in the position of leadership because of the help that they can provide. And it's almost this intoxicating, this dependency, codependency that's created between them and their direct reports, because the direct reports come to them to solve everything for them. The direct reports are always constantly asking them for things that really the direct reports could do themselves, or have the resources to go and find out how to do it from somebody else. That does not need to be escalated to the leader. So it's really finding their voice and being able to say, hold on a second, I'm actually doing a disservice to my direct reports or to my team, because I'm not helping them grow and learn and develop on their own. They're just coming to me constantly and I'm providing them with the answer and I'm doing it for them. So what is the boundary that we need to put in place? And what is the no that's not really a no? And how do we communicate that in a way that people understand that it's not, you're not doing this to hurt them or to be mean to them, but you're doing this for their own good, for their development, and that they are empowered and they can do it themselves.
So that's specifically sounding a lot like a self-pres blind two. How would a self-pres dominant two look any different than the other subtypes?
Well, the self-pres, even the self-pres dominant twos are motivated by giving and helping. And I think they still fall victim to the fact of intuitively knowing what other people need and giving it to them, giving them that help, even if it's not asked for. Mm-hmm. So, and then they're in this cycle of, hold on a second, I'm going above and beyond. I'm not even meeting my own goals. And maybe the self-pres too might be better at meeting their own goals, but they're still reaching out to others and helping others and may not be meeting their own goals fully, because they might be, well, especially with the others, the other instincts, they're helping the others before they're doing their own work, right?
So they're helping. Are you finding that the social twos are more common in the higher levels of corporate? We often think of social twos as being connected with that social upward movement a little bit more and being a little more big in their leadership drive.
Just thinking back on the different type twos in the organizations in which I've consulted and worked, there are lots of self-pres twos, believe it or not, and social twos. I don't see as many one-on-one twos. Yeah.
Thank you. Curious.
Just from just thinking back of, you know, do I have, what are all the reports? But I think that's, yeah, the self-pres tends to be, it's fascinating because the self-pres is, and the socials are more prevalent in my experience.
Thank you. How about Enneagram Point 3? We see a lot of those.
Oh, we don't have any of those in business. Yeah. Oh, our threes. Oh, yeah, we have lots of threes and it's always the same issue. It's always the goals and really putting the goals that feed into their image of expectation of what they should be, what they're trying to be, that prevent them from meeting some of the more personal goals of what's going on health-wise with their families, the relationships with their families. So it's really what I've found works best in this situation is that access to the six and the nine in their triangle, their lines to six and nine, to remind them that they don't need to be doing this. They don't have to be, and they shouldn't be doing this alone, that they have their tribe. They have collaboration from all these other people that can be brought along with them and that really want to help them succeed. They're not in it alone.
Yeah. So, I'm also thinking that the point three tends to be a little bit more task oriented as opposed to people and relationship oriented. So yeah. I think that it's important for the Enneagram three to remember that even if something isn't happening quite as efficiently or the goals and the objectives have some kind of obstacle in the way, that these are still humans that we're dealing with, and that it's important to remember that heart element that the point three brings. And once again, the presence practice, the taking the breath, the allowing the heart to reopen, to really face the heartbreak that is underneath not meeting a certain goal or objective. I'm imagining that's really important to just keep touching back into.
Yeah, and also their own feelings that they're always pushing down, right? Because when they don't address their own feelings, it's going to show up. It's going to come out in another way.
Absolutely.
that's not going to be productive and it's not going to be effective and it's not going to be efficient and it's going to drag them down.
Are you also seeing less sexual threes in corporate environments than the self-pres and the social?
I see lots of self-pres threes in leadership positions in the companies that I've worked with.
Because they're driven by the money and they tend to be workaholics. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the social, like the promotions and the prestige and the leadership.
But I think the majority of the leaders that I see are self-pres threes.
Okay. Not even social, huh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if the social threes are more in like political roles, things where there's more of a spotlight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It depends on, it might be a selection bias on my part because of the companies with which I work. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I don't work with political entities. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And how about Enneagram Point 4?
We don't see fours in organizations.
Yeah.
They're not attracted to for-profit organizations. They're attracted to the arts. They're attracted to nonprofits, to mission-driven organizations. Mm-hmm. They're unicorns. They're very rare. So it's perfect. They're unicorns. They're very rare in organizations. And when they are in organizations, they need to be in a unique role. So they don't stay long because usually, especially in large organizations, you don't have one role, like the one person in this role. There are multiple people in those roles doing the same type of job.
Yeah.
So unless
you don't have to really coach that. Yeah. If you find out you have a four on your team, do you just turn to them and say, get out? This isn't going to work for you.
No. No, because again, we need all nine energies on every team in every organization. And even if we don't have someone who leads with four, there are others that will have access to four, some higher than others, of course. And we need that. We need that access to four, that sense of aesthetic, that sense of genuineness, that sense of purpose, that sense of really meaning.
And how do you coach the threes and the sevens and the eights that you find all over the place to understand that? And how do they reward and cultivate? And what do you tell them when they're dealing with their occasional 0.4 employee?
So it's very, very rare. And usually if a type four employee is in an organization, they've learned to lean into their three wing. Mm-hmm. So they're producing, they're usually in creative roles like graphic design or the marketing department, right? So they're in roles that really tap into their creative side. And so it's very rare. And actually, especially for threes, we want them to tap into their four wings. So what can they learn from the fours? How can they slow down? How can they stop and smell the roses? How can they really access that part that they're not really accessing, that they're shutting down in themselves, right? But it's making sure that the fours feel that they are recognized for their uniqueness, for the unique value that they have, not that they're one of many, not that they're ordinary. Again, the ordinariness being the blind spot for the four, not feeding into them. You're one of in a cog, right?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And how about Enneagram Point 5?
So the fives are, again, are observers or analysts.
Investigator, they're sometimes
investigators.
Called.
Investigators, yeah. Thank you. And what we need to make sure with the fives is, again, the benefit that they bring is that objectivity, that ability to collect all this random information that's happening all around them and make it make sense. So put it in models, make it into predictive models. But what we need to make sure is we're not shining the spotlight on them. We're not calling them out when they're not prepared. We're not asking them to give feedback on something they just have seen, or especially feedback on how they're feeling. Like they need time. They need that processing time. And then they'll get back to you and they'll give you the really well thought out answer. So it's providing that space for the fives. It's really making sure that we're tapping into that energy, that they don't become invisible. Right. So that we don't overlook them, or if they don't have the answer right then and there, that we still give them time to provide it, because we need that information. That's going to be the right information that we're going to need for the evidence or the data or the facts that we need to make decisions or whatever it is.
I think not doing the golden rule with Enneagram Point 5 is particularly important, because when you have a bunch of threes, sevens, and eights, you're going to imagine that the five will be motivated by the things that motivate the threes, sevens, and eights. And I think particularly with point fives, you really need that expertise. It's so important to get the knowledge and the extensive insights that they're going to bring to the organization. But I laughed because a lot of Nobel Prize winners are actually 0.5s, because if you think about the depth of study and the insights that a Nobel Prize winner would get. And it's funny, I heard an Enneagram 0.5 Nobel Prize winner saying, you know, it's the worst thing ever because people show up and they tell you you've won the Nobel Peace Prize and they announce it in this like big way where like everybody's there and you're supposed to be like excited that you got this like, Nobel Prize when it's the last thing this guy said he would have wanted. And he had a very strong recommendation that what they do is they send you a private letter saying you have won the Nobel Prize. Would you like to accept this, or would you? Is it good enough just to know you won it, and we'll give it to the next guy? Because all of the celebration and the hullabaloo and everything that comes along with achieving that level. So a 3, a 7, or an 8 would be pretty pumped up by
that.
Bring it on. And the 5's like, good enough to know, and please don't tell anybody else. Yeah,
exactly.
It's funny. Yeah.
Yeah, the quiet specialist is what I was trying to remember. Yeah, the quiet specialist is the archetype for the type 5, absolutely. And always remembering to not make them look foolish, right? Because that's one of their fears. So that they're afraid of looking foolish when they're not prepared, when the spotlight is being just shining on them and they're not prepared for this, like all this hullabaloo and hoopla that you've just described.
Yeah, thank you. And how about Enneagram 6?
So the 6s are a very underutilized and under-recognized and undervalued type in organizations, especially I think in Western civilization, because we're always about positivity and movement forward and don't bring us down and don't throw monkey wrenches into things. And whenever a type 6 interjects an objection or an opposition or this, hold on, we didn't think about this thoroughly enough, or this could go wrong, and we need to consider this other thing. And last time we did this, this thing went wrong, and we need to make sure that that doesn't happen. It's being seen or received as this person's negative, and they're just trying to stop us and slow us down, when in reality, they're not. They're actually trying to help you achieve the goal and to think about things that we should be thinking about. So when leaders recognize that, and I've had a type 3 leader who was very frustrated with her type 6 coworker, direct report, and how to best work with creating space for them to do that. So yeah, let's do all the brainstorming. Let's have all the, what are the wonderful things that we can do? What are the options? What are the opportunities? And then create the space for like, okay, if we want some of these things to happen, what do we make sure doesn't happen? So what are the negative things that can happen? Let's invite the 6 energy in that way. So a lot of 6s have been very frustrated because they don't feel like they have that voice, or that they're being shut down or excluded because of the viewpoint and perspective that they bring. And it is necessary. We need it. Because if we don't come up with these backup contingency plans, which is their superpower, we'll fail. So
yeah, I resonate with that deeply too, as an Enneagram 3 that needs to keep pulling in my 6 energy. I have just completed training for psychedelic medicine, and I've been trying to go through all of the malpractice and all of the forms and all of the what could go wrong in this field. And, you know, coming out of this realm of possibility where it's a very brave space and a place where so many wonderful things can happen, but to just slow everything down and back it up and talk to all the lawyers and talk to all the insurance carriers and, you know, make sure that we've got all of these contingencies in place. It can be hard. And yet you go through all of that, and just knowing that that due diligence is happening, you realize that now your effort can be that much more robust going forward. So even though it's not a fun energy for me to connect with either, it's important. And my office manager is definitely 1 in 6 in her tri-type. I think she's a 1-6. I have to think about the other one. But anyway, that I really appreciate the way that she will slow down and just be doing all of the things that we need to do as a practice to make sure that we don't get ourselves into trouble. It's very important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it comes natural. It's natural to her. And for other people that don't enjoy being in that space, there are people that do. And there are people that can access that and enjoy doing that as well. Or again, find how to access that energy especially if it's not natural or comfortable or happy for you, it will be for someone else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Now we've got our Enneagram 7. We've made it around the wheel.
Yeah.
And I'm imagining that there, whereas I think 3s and 8s are more often in leadership roles, you find your 7s probably all over the organization. Is that true?
They're very much in leadership roles, especially entrepreneurs. They're entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Their superpower is visionary. So we reward visionary. We want visionary. They're also our epicures, our adventurers. They're also so able to get people to follow them. They create this excitement. So that's another superpower that we see, which is another reason why we promote them. And they're positive outlook. They create this positive view, this positive future that people want to be part of. And that's exciting. The 7s, our epicures, our adventurers, are in that headspace, the center for thinking, and are great at brainstorming. They're great at coming up with new ideas, great at seeing connections, great at seeing opportunities, and vocalizing, externalizing them. And the problem, the challenge there can be that people hear them externalizing or vocalizing them and believe that that is a direction or a directive or a way to go and start implementing some of those things. And that's not what the 7s intended at all. It was just thinking. It was just thinking out loud. So a lot of challenges, a lot of frustrations that our teams have with our 7 leaders can be, I just don't know. It's just like we're going everywhere and there's no, yes, there's excitement and vision, but there are lots of visions and lots of ways to go. And there isn't one specific one and it can be very scattered or received in a very scattered way. So getting our 7 leaders to focus and say, this is the direction, this is what we're doing. Let's brainstorm and then get into the land of 8 of execution, or, you know, protector, general, boss, challenger, whatever nomenclature you want to use for the type 8 energy. How do we get to that execution point? Like, what are we going to decide on to work on and not just sit in this land of amazing opportunities, right?
Yeah.
And the other challenge is the 7s can get frustrated because everyone's out there working on all these different ideas and directions and missing the deadlines on what is actually the goal or the targets or the promises or the commitments. And then the 7s will go into their one space of perfectionism and then start being the micromanager, which people don't expect because they don't experience that at all. And so they're all confused about what's going on here. I thought I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. And now you're telling me I need to be doing something else. And you haven't been this watching this closely before. So it's just this experience of a very different type of person, which confuses people.
Yeah, so that 1-7 arrow can have Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of energy associated with it.
Well, all of them, even the 2-8 arrow, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The 2-8 arrow, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I was interested when you said moving into execution of point 8. What would you call point 3? I think of them both as execution types. Or how is it different?
There's a slight difference. So the 8 energy is action, right? It's in the action center, the body center, the gut center. And it's usually execution through others. Whereas the 3 is execution on my own and shine that spotlight on me. And again, one of the learnings for the 3 is you don't have to do it all and you don't have to do it all alone. So how can you learn from the 9 and the 6 lines, which are more about that collaboration and that teamwork and working together? So it's not just you. You're working with your tribe. So it's a slight difference there. And again, the 3 coming at it from the heart energy and the 8 coming at it from the action energy. And the heart energy being suppressed, right? That pushing it down and
Thank
not
you.
Taking
That makes
into
sense.
Consideration the others and their feelings too.
Yeah, well, we made it. We made it around the whole wheel. Thank you, Carl. I think that really is giving everybody some insight into the power of the Enneagram in organizations and specifically how if they need some support, they could reach out to you and talk more. And I'm just curious, before we wrap up today, are there any final words or anything you'd like to share with the audience?
No, I'm just excited to get the word out about the Enneagram and its many different applications for many different areas of life. And just if we can all just learn to understand each other better and work with each other better and understand that we can integrate all these 9 different energies that are within us, not just our core or preferred or favorite, because that's what's worked for us in our childhood, that we could actually make the world a better place and achieve peace ultimately.
Thank you.
So all the types are equally valuable. They're equally valid. We need them all. And we need to integrate them all within us for our own development, our own emotional intelligence. Yeah.
Well, I'll be sure to put the links in the show notes for your Taking Care of Business with the Enneagram, as well as Nina and the Really, Really Tough Decision, so that our listeners can hopefully check these out. And thank you so much for sharing stuff with us today. I really appreciate it.
Again, thank you, Kara, for creating the platform to do so.
If you're enjoying these episodes, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts and various Android platforms. If you leave a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, it helps a lot. If you have any questions you'd like addressed in a future episode, please email me at social@karenancemd.com. I also offer a wide variety of services at my practice, including typology, Enneagram coaching, nonviolent communication training, and mindfulness trainings for working with stress, anxiety, and food cravings. Please visit my website at karenancemd.com to schedule a free 30-minute consultation if you'd like to work with me in any way. We also have the opportunity for free classes.